This time of year, teens are looking forward to summertime and freedom from the pressures of school. But for 16-year-old Sam Fuller of Albany, California, not much is going to change. He never stays up late cramming for tests or finishing homework or worrying about his parents' reaction to a report card. An estimated 2 million kids are homeschooled. Sam Fuller is part of an even smaller subset of children who are unschooled. That's a less structured, more self-directed form of homeschooling. Sam's family is unschooling him and his brother legally by registering their house as a private school. Youth Radio brings us his story.
I didn't have a reason to read until I was 10, so I didn't. Eventually, when I did learn, it wasn't because of a book, test, a teacher, or even because I was embarrassed I didn't know how. I learned to read because of a card game I wanted to play called Magic the Gathering.
Ooh. Oh my God. I passed that, I think.
In order to play this new and exciting game, I had to read about the different characters on the cards. I'm 16 now. I learn what I want to learn, when I want to learn it, and not always in the conventional ways. My mom had the idea to unschool me when she was a teacher and I was a baby.
And I thought, oh, here I have a 4-month-old baby, and, well, you know, this is fine the way he's learning now. This is really the ideal school. He's learning exactly what he needs to, when he needs to learn it, with plenty of support in a loving environment. I don't really see any reason that that has to change.
Unschooling is like homeschooling, except entirely self-directed, with lots of help and support from my parents. When I first got my allowance of $2.50 a week, I remember calculating how long I'd have to save up to buy my next toy. Everything I've ever learned has been for a practical purpose, or because I was interested. Never for a test, or because someone made me. My 12-year-old brother, Nikki, has also been unschooled his whole life. He's pretty shy. He likes reading fantasy books and watching South Park. Before last year, he wasn't comfortable with groups of kids.
What do you do all day?
Well, depends. Kind of bored, usually.
What would you like to be doing?
Well, I usually wish I had a new book to read, or like a TV series to watch, or something.
My mom will occasionally suggest activities, like going to the botanical garden. But Nikki will usually shoot them down with an immediate no. He's in between interests, yet he's nervous about trying new things. I had a similar problem when I was his age. It's part of growing up unschooled. We don't have as much pressure from school and friends telling us what to like, so it's our responsibility to figure out how to spend our time. My grandpa is one of the people in my family who had concerns about unschooling.
I didn't think it was a good idea. One of the reasons that I was worried was I was afraid your education might be a little spotty. The other thing is the social aspect of the thing. For example, you couldn't take part in team sports.
Not having a social life is a big misconception about unschoolers. In our world, the idea that we are shut-ins who barely see the light of day is kind of a joke. Unschooled kids have their own networks and conferences. We go on camping trips, and we hang out with friends whenever we want. And the truth is, my grandpa's right. My education is spotty. Up until a year ago, I could barely spell. It was my own fault, because I was reluctant to take on the daunting task. Most parents would have intervened in this situation.
But then I think there's a cost to that.
My mom again.
When you force somebody to do something, especially when they're a child and there's an imbalance in a power relationship anyway, they lose part of their will and their confidence that they know what's right for them. And I think that's a pretty high cost for being a good speller.
A few months ago, my mom bought a book and we started working on my spelling. And I've also enrolled in my first community college class, with a plan of transferring my credits to a 4-year university. And although I acknowledge school does work for some people, I am incredibly grateful my parents decided to unschool me. For NPR News, I'm Sam Fuller.
Sam's story comes to us from Youth Radio. Listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
Finally, the economic recovery's lagging. We're bumping up against the debt ceiling. We're still fighting two wars, maybe three if you count Libya. We're in a mess. So why do I feel the need to talk about some of the latest television offerings, especially the so-called reality shows like Basketball Wives? The third season premiere was last week on VH1. I'll give you a little taste from season two in case you missed it.
You think I, like, researched who dude was with? It was like you didn't even exist.
I'm certainly not going to let you sleeping with him mean something to me. That wasn't the issue.
You're missing the point of what the I'm saying.
Basketball Wives follows the exploits of a cast of women who are, or were, or sorta kinda, married to professional athletes. It's executive produced by Shaquille O'Neal's former wife, Shawnee O'Neal, the mother of five of the children they had together. Of course, this is only one of the reality show genre. There are shows about people who make cupcakes, detail motorcycles, get tattoos. But the big deal shows are the shows aimed at women. Teen Mom, for example, the Real Housewives franchise, and of course, Basketball Wives. Now, my quarrel is not just with Basketball Wives. All of these fake so-called reality shows are essentially the same. They're either mostly white with a token Latina or black woman. They're mostly black with a token Latina or white woman thrown into the mix. Everybody's wearing expensive clothes, living in lavish homes, and driving fancy cars. And in between all that, they're very busy shopping and drinking champagne and cursing each other out. And generally, doing a whole lot of nothing much else, which is why I call them so-called reality shows, because I don't know about you, the expensive clothes and big jewels and nice houses in the lives of the people I know who have those things come from working. And we don't see too much of that on those shows. Isn't it strange, though, that in a world where the buzz attracting possible presidential contenders is about women, where the big advances in fighting poverty around the world center on women, where the human rights causes of the day often concern women, that we get television about women whose only claim to fame is who they are more or less married to? But even if it's a little out of sync, you can see why people think it's harmless fun. Can I just tell you, it's not harmless. The problem is these shows are teaching a whole generation of people exactly how not to behave in life and in a relationship with anybody, not just a husband. The drink throwing, the yelling, the fingers in the face, the B-word thrown around like rain, it's exhausting, it's dysfunctional. And it's exactly how you don't want to behave if you ever want to succeed at anything except being a reality show star. And it's amazing to me that nobody seems to have noticed that in the case of Basketball Wives, at least, Shawnee O'Neal, the executive producer, cast herself as counselor and peacemaker while the other women roll their necks and act crazy. And why is that? She said in interviews it's because of her children and the need for her to maintain cordial relations with her ex. So what about everybody else's kids? Why isn't it important that other people's children see adults treat each other with respect, especially at a time when in some communities the majority of children are being raised in families where almost no one lives in a two-parent household? And I contrast this with the story we brought you last week about the Israeli father whose son was killed by Hamas. Instead of embracing bitterness, he has decided to partner with a Palestinian man, also a father, to create both scripted drama and less scripted reality shows by which he hopes to create a means for Israelis and Palestinians to see each other in a different light. Elsewhere in the world, television and radio programs are being crafted to educate people to fight the spread of HIV/AIDS, to teach women how to have safe sex, to resolve conflicts peacefully, and so on. Years ago, I moderated a panel for a foundation, and a large group of high school students were invited as guests to talk with an eclectic group of lawmakers and other bigwigs. Those high school kids were giving these adults the blues about everything under the sun. Meanwhile, a big-name hip-hop star came late, left early, took no questions, but got huge ovations every time he opened his mouth. And after he left, I asked the kids, why were they giving him all this love when he'd stayed for half an hour, when these members of Congress had been with them all afternoon and got none of that? And one young man named the hip-hop star and said, that's who we listen to because that's who we see. Exactly. And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Goodbye, Oprah. Hello, Katie.
ABC officially announced today that it's developing a new daytime talk show for Katie Couric. The anchor has been on a job hunt since leaving CBS Evening News, but as NPR's Neda Ulubi reports, today's announcement shed little light on her latest plans.
Since March, Katie Couric has not been shy about being in limbo.
I'm figuring out what I want to do, and I'm just sort of in the process of, figuring out the future.
I'm talking about certain opportunities and figuring
out. I am still kind of mulling my opportunities for the future.
That's Couric on The Late Show with David Letterman, The View, and Tavis Smiley, all within the past 2 months. During that time, she was courted by CBS, which wanted to keep her, in spite of her low ratings as anchor. NBC wanted her, too. Years ago, it profited from Couric's easy connection with audiences and interviewees back when she hosted The Today Show. But the battle for Katie Couric was won by ABC. Its plan is to reunite her with the man who many years ago helped her dominate the ratings.
Jeff Zucker.
That's television analyst Andrew Tindall.
Her star executive producer in her glory days at The Today Show.
Couric's performance on The Today Show still has people thinking an interview format can play to her strengths.
But what if you do have the date from hell and you're so turned off to dating?
But can this team recreate its earlier ratings magic? Doubtful, says Tindall. Their success had maybe less to do with their brilliance than the fact that The Today Show is a rock-solid franchise.
And that's, I think, proven by the fact that The Today Show has gone on from strength to strength, even after Couric left and even after Zucker have left.
Nevertheless, ABC's counting on Couric to do for afternoon programming what she failed to do for the evening news, rescue a time slot in decline. ABC just lost Oprah, and it needs a new daytime star. But even Oprah's audiences have significantly declined since her show's peak. Tindall thinks the cards are stacked against Couric, too.
Just as Couric wasn't able to revive the evening news, she won't be able to revive afternoon television either.
This is all awfully pessimistic. But Tindall says don't blame a top celebrity journalist trying to persevere in a world profoundly different from the one she started out in. The broadcast networks no longer have a monopoly on audiences. Where they once were able to push people to watch their journalism, now they're depending on star power to grab viewers.
In other words, it was the television that delivered the audience to the journalist rather than the journalist that attracted the audience to television.
Part of Couric's challenge will be creating a show that's new school, not just trotting old ground in a familiar format. The show is scheduled now for 3 p.m. in many major markets. Couric reportedly wanted the 4 p.m. time slot, a piece of television real estate that formerly belonged to Oprah. 3 p.m. is General Hospitals, another network format that seems to be fading away. Neda Ulubi, NPR News.